This is We Watch Movies, the podcast. My name is Forrest. And with Valentine's Day just 199 days away, we've decided to present to you a rom-com special. Joining me today, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Elijah. Elijah, how's it hanging?
It's not bad. I'm a little disappointed that we missed the 200-day eve of Valentine's Day, but I'll guess I'll make do with 199.
Yeah, 199 is not bad.
Yeah,
it's 200 after taxes. It's 199 before taxes.
Gotcha. Interesting to talk about something other than Avatar. It's been 3 weeks of Avatar, but we're
personally finally... I'm not ready, but.
Yeah, you'll survive. We need to move on eventually.
But Elijah says it's not good business to keep talking about the same thing. So, in spirit of that, we have moved on to rom-coms, as I mentioned in the intro. I picked the 2005 rom-com Hitch. Elijah, you picked?
I picked the 2019 romantic comedy Netflix original film Always Be My Maybe.
Okay, well, you don't need to be that pretentious about it.
It was directed by Nanachik
Khan.
Yes.
It's Nanachik Khan, yeah.
I have not read his name out loud before.
Well, he is a she, and she also executive produced Fresh Off the Boat, which also starred Randall Park.
Wow, so I'm just like a flaming hot garbage pile right now with the whole name pronunciation and all that. Wow.
Well, Nanachik Khan would be very disappointed in you.
I'm sorry, Miss Khan.
And in the second segment, we are not going to do our normal segment. We're basically, it's an extended first segment. We're going to be talking about a non-rom-com, the great musical La La Land. And I'm very excited for that.
Romantic musical, romantic comedy. Same thing, basically.
It's a rom-mu.
Rom-sicle.
Rom-sicle, that feels right.
Sounds like a popsicle made out of ramen.
Yes, it's a
rom-sicle. We're already off the rails.
I didn't know we were on the rails, so.
When was the last time we were on the rails?
I think we were talking about Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Speaking of, before we dive in here to the rom-coms, I want to wish a happy birthday to Christopher Nolan, who has turned 50 today. Very happy that he is 50 and he put out 10 great films. We are waiting with great anticipation for Tenet.
Fun fact, my local drive-in movie theater is going to be screening Tenet on September 3rd.
Can I come?
No.
No.
It's just for me.
No one else can come. Just Elijah. Anyway, that's out of the way. Before we get into the movies, obligatory spoiler alert. We're going to be talking about these movies. And really, the only one that's worth not spoiling is La La Land. But that's neither here nor there. Elijah. Are you ready to begin?
Yes, I am. Don't forget that we have an Instagram that Forrest runs. I do literally nothing with it. It's at We Watch Movies Podcast, all one word. So check that out.
So please don't send all your Elijah fan mail to Instagram. Our fan emails. Our fan messages. Elijah fan messages, don't send them to me.
Yeah, I'm swamped constantly, and we're just overloading the Instagram with them. So, I mean, you can give some love to Forrest, too. But I know that's hard sometimes.
Girls, he's already married, okay? Just let him go.
Forrest isn't, though. Wink, wink.
Okay, this is embarrassing now. All right. Why don't we talk about your film first?
Cool. This will be interesting. I'm going to go ahead and give you... Oh, do you have your summary?
No, I did not do that for this film. So please proceed.
Yeah, so Always Be My Maybe is a 2019 Netflix original written by Ali Wong and Randall Park, starring Ali Wong and Randall Park and James Saito and Michelle Buteau, Vivian Bang and Daniel Dae Kim and other people, including Keanu Reeves, who we will get to. It is, in essence, about there are two friends who grew up as best friends, Randall Park and Ali Wong's characters, Sasha and Marcus, and they were best friends when they were little, and as they grew older, they grew apart, and they went very different directions in their life. Sasha became a world-famous celebrity chef, and Marcus fixes air conditioners with his dad while playing in a very small underground hip-hop-ish band with tennis balls. And they meet again later on in life by happenstance, and things go from there. And since it's a rom-com, you can expect hijinks and romance.
I'd just like to say HVAC is more than just air conditioning. It's also heating and venting.
You would know, wouldn't you, Mr. Construction Man?
Yes. Yes, I would. Anyway, and they make good money.
I believe it, actually. I had a friend who worked construction in summers and made bank, so good for you, Construction Man.
Good for you, Construction Man.
Anyway, Always Be My Maybe.
Tell us about this movie.
I literally just told you about this movie, but you will hear two very different opinions about it. I really enjoy this movie. Jackie actually had me watch it for the first time, and we really like it. We watched it together a couple times. It's pretty light. It's not super heavy. There's some good character arcs and development where Sasha learns how to let go of her ambition a little bit and rein it in for Marcus, and Marcus learns to get out of his comfort zone a little bit, and they kind of meet halfway in the middle, which is really sweet. I think it's really funny. There's a sequence, there's about a 20-minute sequence in the middle of the movie with Keanu Reeves playing Keanu Reeves, and it is glorious. It's hilarious, especially in the restaurant. It's just a really fun, innocent, little harmless rom-com that it's one Jackie and I just kind of turn on whenever we don't really know what to watch. And aside from that, it is written by Ali Wong, and Ali Wong has some really good stand-up comedy specials on Netflix. They're pretty R-rated, but they're funny. Jackie and I watch a lot of stand-up comedy. But yeah, that's my basic thoughts. I'm sure I'll have to defend the movie here in a moment.
Side note, who's your favorite stand-up comedian?
John Mulaney.
Who's your favorite sit-down comedian?
John Mulaney.
I'm a fan of Jim Gaffigan. And
Gaffigan's great. He just had a new special release on Amazon.
I know. Oh, I didn't know it was on Amazon, but it was on Spotify and I listened to it. It was good.
Nice. I love his what was the one before this one? I forget. The one with the horse jokes. That one's great.
Is he still talking about horses? How many horse jokes does he have?
So many horse jokes.
Yes, 10 minutes of horse jokes.
It's great. Jim Gaffigan's good. John Mulaney's good. Ali Wong's good. I watch a lot of stand-up comedy. What did you think of this movie?
I like Jerry Seinfeld.
Classic.
Yeah, he's the greatest. This movie is a movie. It is a rom-com, and I did not like it at all.
Yeah, you gave it the pretty low rating there on Letterboxd.
Yeah, I didn't know that you were going to check that. Otherwise, I would have waited, but it's a little embarrassing. Yeah, so I watched the movie, and I really, really, really hated it. I don't think I revel in bashing films that often, so I'm not trying to just bash this film, but I no part of this film resonated with me. I thought the characters were uninteresting. I thought they were all annoying. Something I mentioned to you earlier is I did not appreciate the humor at all. I don't recall laughing at any point during the film. I thought a lot of it was crude, crass, just gross and vulgar. Not all of it. I'll say not all of it, but a lot of it was, and it made me it disturbed me and frustrated me and made me uncomfortable watching it. And then some of the stuff I was hearing them say and some of the stuff that they showed me, I was had no interest in seeing or hearing. And you can call me a prude if you'd like, but that's really not my style. So I did not appreciate the humor of it at all. And yeah, it just left me feeling gross in a way. And honestly, I've been trying to forget about it for the last 2 days, and it's been driving me crazy because I can't get it out of my head. And I'm sorry, I've been bashing it, and I'll let you go on and talk, extol its virtues here, but I just did not like it at all.
I mean, to each his own. I struggle to think we even watched the same movie because I felt there was, I felt it really wasn't all that crass or vulgar. Sure, there's some stuff in there, but maybe I'm just numb to a lot of things. Yeah, I think it's a really enjoyable movie. I think it's very well written. I like how the characters are, they're good foils of each other at the beginning with Marcus being so sheltered, and he literally has like never left his hometown. He knows this one diner, and he knows all the servers there, and he's buddy buddy and talks to them. He still works with his dad, and his dad's trying to get him out of the house. Honestly, it's kind of funny. And then Sasha's this massive world-renowned chef, and with tons of ambition, wanting to open up new restaurants everywhere. It's just they're really good opposites. And that's a really good strong basis for a rom-com, and I appreciated it because instead of forcing one of them to change completely to the other side, the movie did a good job of helping them meet in the middle. I think you could argue Marcus had to change a little bit more, but Sasha seemed to come to appreciate his just what he wanted out of life as well, with her opening that final restaurant. How he wanted it to, very home style, very grounded, and how his mother would have wanted it, who died early in the film. That's like the first scene, so it's not a huge spoiler or anything. Not that we're not spoiling this.
It's not a huge spoiler, although we are spoiling everything.
Yeah, a couple other things. I thought it was funny. I think Ali Wong is very funny. I think her assistant was funny. I loved the Keanu Reeves sequence. Basically, Marcus has a girlfriend, and Sasha has the secret girlfriend, and they decide to go on a double date. And the secret, sorry, Sasha has a secret boyfriend. They decide to go on a double date, and the secret boyfriend is Keanu Reeves. Like, Keanu Reeves playing Keanu Reeves. And it's the restaurant scene. They're in this, like, super hilarious, hipster, edgy, like mega expensive thing where he wants to like experience his food, and he's like listening to the deer or the animal he's eating while he's eating it. It's hilarious, and I love that scene.
I will say the one reason I was interested in watching this film from the onset was because Keanu Reeves scene, and I'd watched the Keanu Reeves scene previously, so I was kind of interested to see the film.
That's fair. I think it's a great scene, and I like it a lot. All the performances, despite what you think of the writing of the movie, I'm sure you don't hate the performances for what they're given. All the performers are very good in the movie. And another thing I really appreciate about this one is it's a rom-com that to me doesn't feel like a stupid, obnoxious rom-com with manufactured drama. Based on the characters we're given, everything feels surprisingly natural and not artificial or forced like so many rom-coms fall into. So I appreciated that about the movie. And overall, like, it's just enjoyable for me. It may not be super memorable or anything, but it's something I won't ever be upset about watching.
How many times have you seen it?
I believe this was my third time.
Gotcha. I did like that they used 93 till infinity. That's a good song. I do like that song.
Yeah. Did you listen to the credits rap?
No, I got out of there.
Oh man, you missed out. So in the movie, Marcus has a band and the songs are not what I would usually listen to.
But no, they're not.
But it's funny. And over the credits, he writes a song about Keanu Reeves. And I think the main hook of the chorus is, "You best believe I punched Keanu Reeves." And it's hilarious. I love every second of the credits. Also, I love their merch debacle, where in his band, he's trying to like expand merch or whatever. And their manager or one of the band members just got a bunch of tennis balls as merch. So he has to write a song called Tennis Ball, and it kind of works out. It's funny. I think there's a lot to love about this movie. It's charming and charismatic, and they're cute together, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how we can, and obviously this is all subjective, but how we can each watch the same film and come away with such stark contrast in opinion, especially when I think generally we tend to agree on a lot of films.
Yeah, we generally have, if not similar taste, we at least have similar respect for most movies, whether that be a lot of it or little to none. But this is one of our first extreme disagreements since Die Hard, honestly.
Yeah, but that's true. The problem is, you mentioned their chemistry. I thought that they didn't really have any chemistry.
What does chemistry look like to you then? Also, they're fighting for most of the movie, which means...
Exactly!
They shouldn't have chemistry.
Yeah. Wait, are you legitimately asking me what I think chemistry should look like?
I mean, I'm kind of curious now if you don't think that was it.
No, that's... You know what, man? I don't know. But watching them on screen, I did not believe them as an actual couple. And so it did not help me to buy into the film.
Okay. I won't bash you for your opinion, though I think it is incorrect. I honestly wish Jackie was on this episode with us so she could bash your opinion for me.
Would she pull no punches?
She would pull punches. She would say she wouldn't, but that she would because she's too nice.
You're wrong, but I respect that you're wrong.
Yeah, I feel like we're not going to have much more to talk about this one since it's really just two completely different opinions.
Well, let's talk about the Keanu Reeves dinner scene.
Did you at least enjoy that scene, like, a little bit?
Yeah, I liked the fact that Keanu Reeves was there.
Okay, I'll take it, I guess. I love that he's just so larger than life in this movie. Keanu Reeves is, he's hilarious in the scene, super like hyperbolic of himself. I love how obsessed Marcus's then girlfriend is with him and how he says really stupid, like, cerebral crap just makes no sense. I love the restaurant.
He's very much playing a caricature of his perception, his public perception.
Absolutely. And that's hilarious. I love also how Marcus like dresses up really nice and looks really nice in this tux or whatever. Everyone else is in like stupid street clothes. Look, hey,
yeah,
that you just laughed.
That's true. I did.
That was a laugh. We got one laugh.
He dressed up in his prom tux.
Yeah, that's great. It's hilarious. And then
I dropped out of high school, joined the workforce.
I love at the end when he decides to like go to New York with Sasha to, and like he's going to surprise her. He goes to get a new suit and he's getting fitted for like a really fancy one. And he's like, how much is this? And they tell him, he's like, get this thing off of me. And then he goes to like the budget rental store and gets one for a couple $100. Quality stuff.
There's quality stuff. Speaking of Keanu Reeves, did you know that when he went to Hollywood and he was trying to start out on his acting career, his managers or whomever told him that Keanu Reeves, the name, would never sell and he needed to think of a stage name. So he thought about it for a day and he came back with the name that he thought up, and the name was Chuck Spadina. Upon hearing this, his manager told him to stick with Keanu Reeves.
Understandable. Also, you are trying very hard to talk about anything other than Always Be My Maybe right now.
What's that?
You just don't want to talk about this movie at all.
I don't know what movie you're talking about. What is this?
This is a
podcast. Is it hot in here? yeah, I'm sorry, man. Go ahead.
Why don't we just save face and score it and move on?
No, I'll just say, I think you know that I go in fairly open-minded, and a lot of the time I want to like something. A lot of the things that you share with me, I genuinely want to try to like, and I just felt gross watching this movie, if that's, you know, for lack of a better term. And I definitely understand you liking it and enjoying it, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, so please don't misconstrue that. It just was not for me,
and that's okay, just as long as Harry Potter is for you. Otherwise I will be very upset. All in all, I'm gonna give
the podcast got canceled because
it's done. It's over. We're finished. I'm going to give Always Be My Maybe 3.5 stars. I think it's really fun. Worth watching. If you think you would like it based on what you've heard, you probably will. If you think you would dislike it based on what you've heard, maybe just don't watch it.
So you bumped it up from the 3 stars you have on Letterboxd right now, huh?
Pretty sure it's 3.5 on Letterboxd.
Okay. This is embarrassing. I'm going to give this film 0.5 star. I think it's pretty clear from what I've said in the past few minutes that it was not a film for me. I don't plan on watching it again. In fact, I made my own list on Letterboxd saying, titled Films I Wish I'd Never Watched, and it was the first entry on said list.
Wow, you're just going all out with the hate for this one. I'm going to make a list that says films I look forward to watching again, and this is going to be my first entry.
Is it really, though? Because I think Speed Racer is going to be your first entry.
I've watched Speed Racer like 27 times in my life, and I don't regret any of them.
And yet you still look forward to watching it.
Yeah. Now stop being a ninja and let's move on.
Here's the dealio. I would rather watch Solo 10 times over than have to rewatch this film.
Excellent. I have a new way to get you to watch Solo.
Yeah, sure.
By the way, a little mini bonus movie for you guys. Solo is great and you should all watch it. 4 stars.
Don't listen to his lies. Elijah always lies.
No, Forrest always lies.
That's true.
Told you.
Yeah. All right, we're moving on. The next film we're going to be talking about is the 2005 rom-com directed by Andy Tennant, starring Will Smith and Kevin James, Hitch. I will say on the onset, I have watched a lot of rom-coms. I won't say a lot. That sounds like I'm obsessed with them. I've watched a decent amount of rom-coms, and they're usually the ones that you'll find on television, and they're usually the ones that were made in the mid-2000s. This falls right into that category. I'll continue by saying that I think the vast majority of those movies are extremely mediocre, although I am a sucker for anything with Matthew McConaughey. Like, How to Lose a Date, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. That's a good one. And then there's another one, The Wedding Planner, with J-Lo and Matthew McConaughey. I was going to pick that one, but instead I picked this film, Hitch, which I think is the best of those mediocre films. I think this one is just above best. I'm just above mediocre. I think it's a decent, good film. And I genuinely enjoy it, and I've enjoyed it every time I've watched it, which has been several times over the years. Elijah, you've not watched this film before, correct?
No, hadn't seen it before. Jackie had, and she thought it was good. So I watched it, and I thought it was, it's all right.
Yeah. So it is about Alex Hitch Hitchens, who is a professional dating consultant who makes a living teaching men basically the finer points of dating. I think this film is a lot more subtle on the comedy aspects of the film and leans more into the romance, you could say. There's not a lot of humorous dialogue, but a lot of humor in the circumstances. Hitch comes off as very put together and very put together. Let's go with that. And he seems to always have a plan, knows everything there is to know about dating, and he goes on these several dates with this woman, and played by Eva Mendes. Every date blows up catastrophically in his face. And I think those situational comedic circumstances are pretty funny, pretty hilarious. I'd love to hear what you thought.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I think Will Smith saves this movie from being bad, because Will Smith is just the most charismatic guy you can get on screen.
Will Smith saves a lot of movies from being bad.
Yeah, the script here it was fine. I think there were a lot of issues with it, especially around the end of Act 2 and the beginning of Act 3. I will say it did go, it didn't drag out the bad parts too long. I thought the conflict, which in this case, as opposed in my opinion to Always Be My Maybe's conflict, this conflict felt very manufactured and very unnecessary. Like, I felt the whole time that if the two people just talked like normal human beings, nothing would have happened and everything would have been fine. But again, Will Smith makes every scene watchable. Eva Mendes is also really good in it. They have good chemistry together. And like you
agreed.
Said, it's less, what is chemistry though?
I don't know.
It's less rom-com and more like romance with some funny parts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, another highlight of this film, I think, is Kevin James.
Yeah, that was a big surprise for me.
Oh, go on.
I really dislike Kevin James in most of the things he's in, and he didn't annoy me in this movie, which is impressive.
I like Kevin James. Kevin James is funny at times. Yeah.
That's like the Kevin. Key there, at times. And this was one of those times. He wasn't obnoxious. He was subdued in his stupidity.
No, I'm just real. I'm just, it's just dawned on me that I do like Kevin James. I think he's pretty funny. I am the sucker for Mall Cop. The first one, the second one is Flaming Hot Garbage and belongs in the I Wish I Never Watched list.
Well, now you have a second entry.
Oh, no, there are several entries on the list. The Mechanic, for one, which is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Suicide Squad better be on there.
It's not.
You make me so sad.
Here's the thing. I don't regret watching it. So there's that.
This might be the end. It might be over.
This is the end, my friend.
Actually, it's not going to be over yet because we have to do Harry Potter and then it's going to be over.
And then it's over. I'll say when it's over. And not until I say it's over will it be over.
Yeah.
Coming back to Hitch, I thought Kevin James was pretty funny. Situational comedy. One of my favorite situations in the film is when Hitch is trying to teach Kevin James' character how the doorstep kiss, and it just blows up entirely in his face, and Kevin James ends up accidentally kissing Will Smith. It's hilarious and really awkward. It's great. I love it. Not as awkward as this episode, but that's okay. We can't always be unawkward.
You see, what you find awkward and funny, I found cringeworthy, and I barely even watched that scene because I was just kind of uncomfortable the whole time, and I dislike that feeling. I hate scenes like that.
That is interesting.
Why I have not watched The Office, because the whole show makes me feel like that, and I hate that.
Scott's tots.
I don't know what that means.
Scott's tots is very cringy.
Yeah. So that seems like that aren't funny to me. Kevin James was fine, though. I thought him and his lady, her name was Allegra, which was funny because that's an allergy medication. So I laughed at that. I don't know if that's mean, but they were actually kind of cute together. I liked them. That was really sweet. And I liked the ending where she was like, all the stuff that was him was the best. That was really nice. There's some good messages in here. I do want to break down my major issue with the movie, though, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So the conflict arises as such. Earlier in the movie, we have a random scene that feels very out of place where Will Smith meets a potential client who is a total idiot and scumbag, horrible human being, and Will Smith agrees with
Vance
that sentiment.
Munson.
Yes, Vance. We hate Vance. Will Smith hates Vance, rightfully so. And Vance, he rebuffs him and turns him down as a client, which is good. And I was like, okay, Will Smith, you're not a total idiot. That's good. We later find out that the girl Vance was trying to get with was our lead girl, Sarah. What was her name?
Sarah.
Sarah? Yeah. Sarah's best friend was the girl.
Casey. Vance.
Yes. Look at you with your names on fire. Sarah's best friend, Casey, was the girl Vance was trying to get with, not in a sweet romantic way, but in an one night stand way.
And we keep it PG.
Yeah. Just like a a really nasty way. We don't like it. And Casey still falls for him, has a very disappointing and sad, tragic, awful encounter with him. And Sarah finds out about this, and because of one throwaway line that Vance uttered during that encounter about a dating coach or something that is horribly misinterpreted in context by Sarah and Casey, Sarah immediately hates this dating doctor, whoever he is, decides to find out who he is and ruin his life, finds out it's Will Smith, gets mad at him, throws his life basically entirely under the bus by putting him on the front page of tabloids, and then hates him for 5 minutes of the movie it felt so forced that Will Smith, that this guy, Vance, who clearly did not have a problem getting with girls, want to go to a dating coach to get a girl, then have the girl he was going after be the best friend of our main character's love interest. And then on top of that, have that love interest wrongfully interpret one throwaway line said at the awful exchange and then decide to destroy Will Smith's life over it. It felt so forced.
The problem I have is that comment you're referring to, him complaining about the dating coach, makes no sense to me because Will Smith shuts him down entirely and makes him look like a fool and offers him no assistance at all.
Yeah, no matter how you try to interpret that comment, like there really isn't even an interpretation you can draw at all. Makes no sense, right. Like you said.
Yeah, and why would he be complaining about the dating coach that offered him no assistance whatsoever after the whole thing bombed and is just horrible? You know,
exactly.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, so the whole main conflict of the movie made no sense to me. But other than that, it's pretty good.
The arc that each character, Sarah and Hitch, arrive at the end of the film, you know, Sarah being a tabloid writer, arriving to the conclusion at the end of the film, not to jump to conclusions and not every guy is a jerk, and Hitch coming to the conclusion at the end of the film after he realized that all the advice he gave to Albert, Kevin James' character, had played no role whatsoever into how Allegra viewed him. Hitch arrives to the conclusion that there's no one way to... Every woman is different, and there's no set rules, no statistics in any way that you can convince someone to fall in love with you. So I thought those were interesting realizations to arrive at for those characters.
Yeah, I agree. The overall arcs for the characters, the messages given by the movie, all solid. Like, that's good stuff to want to portray in a movie, because it's true. And I really did like the last 15 minutes or so while Will Smith is like finally figuring out what he's actually feeling and working through that verbally. That was really good. Especially yeah, him talking to Allegra and learning, like you said, that it was all Albert's stuff that won her over and not Will Smith's stuff.
Right. And him arriving at the realization or coming to the point where he's run out of all his pre-scripted material when he's talking to Sarah and that conversation he has through the door, and he's, you know, talking to himself, what's wrong with me? And you realize that this guy who seems all, you know, up class and suave is really, once he's run out of his go-to lines and his go-to dates, he's really at a loss, and I can appreciate that.
For sure, yeah. I will say probably my favorite gag in the movie was the part where Sarah opens the door all the way and you see the guy in the background and you're like, well, she's moved on fast. And then at the end, you realize it's revealed that the guy was her brother-in-law.
Yeah.
That was funny. I liked that.
I like the butcher part. That's pretty funny.
I was just confused at that part, honestly. I was like, oh, that's kind of sweet. I don't know why she's crying so much. And then she starts making weird noises. And then we find out that her great-great-grandfather or whatever was a serial killer. And I was like, okay, why did you have such emotional tears about that? I don't know. Yeah. That one I struggled with. I'm glad you thought it was funny.
Yeah, and again, like I said, when we first started discussing this film, a lot of these mid-2000 rom-coms are middling mediocre. I think this is one of the better ones, though that's not to say there's anything amazingly stellar, and that is a flawless film by any means, because it's not. I do enjoy it, however.
Yeah, I can't say I disliked watching it at all. I enjoyed it for what it was, and there's more good than bad, that's for sure.
Yeah. You ready to score this thing?
I'm super ready. I'll go first if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Cool. I'm going to give Hitch a 2.5 stars out of 5 rating. I think it's a thoroughly okay movie. I think it's fine. It's competently made for the most part. I outlined my major issue with it. Will Smith is Will Smith and will automatically elevate whatever he's in. But of the two we discussed today, I personally, me, obviously not Forrest, I would recommend Always Be My Maybe over Hitch if you were only going to watch one of them.
I'm going to give this film a 3 out of 5 stars. Like I said, I really enjoy watching it. I derive a lot of laughs from this film. It's good. It's good. I definitely recommend this film for you to watch. I do not recommend the other film for you to watch.
I think it's funny that I think this episode has made it clear we have very different tastes in comedy, because I laughed very little during Hitch, but I laughed quite a lot during Always Be My Baby.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that's one area of conversation and taste that we've never discussed at all.
Yeah, I think we should do a stand-up comedy special episode sometime.
Interesting, interesting. I would not be opposed to that.
Excellent.
All right, well, moving on to our second segment here, we're going to call an audible. We're going to do a live call-in segment where Elijah issues dating advice, because he has successfully dated and I have not. So that's what's going to happen.
Do you want like actual dating advice or joke dating advice? Because I can give actual advice, but I'd have to think a second if you wanted a joke.
Elijah, you've got 30 seconds to give the best dating advice you have.
Unironically, just be a really good friend. That's it. Be a good person, be a good friend. And if things are supposed to continue down the path you want them to, they will. The friend zone is not as big a deal as you think. That is my advice.
Sage words from a married man.
Yeah, I did the dating twice.
The dating twice. I've done it 2 times less than you.
Ooh, that's ambitious.
I know, right? It's pretty impressive, if you ask me.
Anyway, speaking of dating, let's move on to second segment, which is a movie about dating. Well, it's and a movie music. With dating in it. It's not necessarily about dating. Take it away.
La La Land, the 2016 film directed by Damien Chazelle, starring the great Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone playing Sebastian and Mia. It is about Los Angeles, Hollywood, Los Angeles, California. It is about two people, one a musician, the other an aspiring actress, who meet in Hollywood, and really they weren't really looking for anyone, and they kind of bumped into each other, if you will, and they both changed each other's lives for, I'm going to say, the better. Would you agree?
I think so. Yeah, definitely for the better.
Okay, that said,
hold on, before you go, I just want to say that I really thought you were going to say it was directed by Jamie Lee Curtis.
No. Directed. Oh, that would have been very embarrassing. No, it was directed by Damien Chazelle, his second outing of three thus far feature-length films. Yes,
his best outing of three so far.
Yes, I definitely agree. This is his best outing by far, even though I do love Whiplash. This is a film that we were swapping films back and forth, you know, in kind of leading up to us deciding to do the podcast. And this is the film you chose for me to watch. And I was very pessimistic and disappointed in your choice. And
almost you as grumpy and disappointed as you were when I tried to get you to watch Avatar. And look how that worked out for you, huh?
Okay, that's a great... I love that show so much. I just finished my second full watch through last night, and it is amazing.
We know. La La Land, though, is also
yes. So I was very, very disappointed, and you essentially told me this is my choice, you must watch. And I said, fine. And I sat down to watch it, and I was a little curmudgeon about it, and I was like, I'm going to hate this film. And it turns out that I was dead wrong. And yeah, I was really, really wrong. This is an amazing film. The cinematography is beautiful. You could argue that every single frame of this film could be framed as a piece of art that you could hang on the wall. It is magnificently shot. I love this is a musical. It's a modern musical that pays a ton of homage to the musicals of the past, Singing in the Rain, even in a film like Grease. The choreography in this film is phenomenal, specifically the opening song, Another Day of Sun, where all the professional dancers, which is interesting because it's one of the few, it's the only number without Gosling or Stone, and it is all professional dancers, and it is amazingly, stunningly choreographed that they spent, you know, 3 days doing on top of a overpass in 95 degree weather in Los Angeles in the summer. It's amazing. Shout out to Mandy Moore, the choreographer, for her amazing work. It's such a beautiful film.
Yeah, what he said. This movie, I think it's funny that I saw this movie in theaters. This is one of two movies I've ever seen three times in theaters. The other being Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. The hype was real.
Wow.
And the payoff was moderate. For La La Land,
you watched it three times.
I had to go with all of my different Harry Potter friends.
I don't have any. Well, that's a lie.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
I'm sorry. That's not the way I meant it.
Yeah. Once we're done with Harry Potter, this is just over, man. You're just keep digging.
Maybe that'll boost our views.
You're almost at 6 feet.
Ouch. I'm still sticking out then.
That's true. You're very tall.
All right. Talk about La La Land. I'm sorry.
That was funny. Yeah, so this is one of two movies I've seen thrice in the theaters, and it's very special to me. It was my first date with Jackie, so it has the sentimental value as well. That's another dating tip. Just take her to see La La Land.
Which is no longer in theaters, so take her to your living room, your home theater.
There you go. And I knew as soon as I saw it for the first time, one of my favorite movies.
That you were going to marry Jackie.
That was the third time.
Oh, okay.
I saw it with her.
That's
the third
fair.
Time. Yeah, I immediately knew it was one of my favorites. I don't think I've seen a movie that we've talked about the magic a lot before, and I think this movie has the magic more so than most other movies.
I have a hard time finding a film with, we talk about that magic, the ethereal magic, with more magic than this film.
Yeah, absolutely. It's magnetic. The movie is magnetic. Everything is firing perfectly together on all cylinders. The performances, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, holy crap. I think, especially in a romantic movie, I think one of my qualifiers for good performances is whether or not I remember the characters' names. And me and Sebastian, I think, one of the best couples in movies ever.
If one of means the best, then I agree.
I don't want to say that because I haven't seen every movie, but of the ones I've seen, they're my favorite movie couple. But every song is amazing. The emotional beats of the script hit so hard. The direction and the cinematography are flawless, and it just makes everything comes together to make a beautiful masterpiece of glorious proportions. And I watch this movie a couple times a year for sure. I will continue to do so. It is literally magical.
No, this film is absolutely stellar. And that's a word I wrote down a lot of notes for this film. And one of the words that I kept writing was the word stellar. I thought the score by Justin Horowitz is, as I said, stellar. The original music written for this film is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, Another Day of Sun, City of Stars, Lovely Night. Those are incredible, not just songs, but incredible moments in the film that suck you further in to the film, and where a lot of the magic comes from, specifically the Lovely Night, that whole sequence between Mia and Sebastian walk the car and stopping, and they have the dance, and it is so... It just makes me so happy inside. The music, the lyrics of the song, the dancing, the lighting, the setting. I know that the sky being this purple haze, it feels almost unrealistic, but just believable enough to be real. And it is, that just plays into that magic factor phenomenally. Another thing that I love is I love jazz. I'm a big jazz fan, so seeing Sebastian just go crazy about people like Hoagy Carmichael or Miles Davis or Charlie Bird Parker, I love that our opening introduction to Sebastian, he's listening to Thelonious Monk's Japanese folk song, trying to transpose it, and he keeps rewinding it a little bit so he can hear it and work out all the notes in his head. It's great. I love that Ryan Gosling learned by rote all of the musical pieces on the piano for this film.
Yeah, what he said. It's hard. You'd be hard pressed to find something not to love in this movie. There are a couple things, key things I want to talk about. One, the ending.
Yeah.
Is probably polarizing to the general audiences, mm-hmm. but I think it's phenomenal. Seeing Mia and her husband, who is not Sebastian, which hits hard when you first see that.
And every other time you see it.
Yeah. When they walk into Seb's.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a fever dream at that point, and when they show you what could have been, it hurts in the best way. But I love that the movie encourages you to follow your dreams, and that there are people in your life you will love who will encourage those dreams, and doesn't always mean they'll be there. I don't know, it's just really good, and the weird trippy visuals of that whole sequence are super fun and creative as well. And the music is one big amalgamation of everything that's come before. It's great.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think I love that they did the dream sequence, the dream montage, and they added that in the film. I think it's one of the best moments of film that I've seen, but it also makes it so much more bitter because you visually see what could have been, and that's not what you get. So it's such this bittersweet, conflicted sense of emotion. I remember watching it with my sister, and I'd seen it, and I was showing it to her for the first time, and she was, I'm not going to say devastated, but she was pretty close to it when she saw the ending. And when I showed it, when I watched it with my mom the following day, she was equally nearly devastated by the fact that they did not end up together.
Yeah, it's not what you expect with any romantic movie.
No. But I think the film is better off for it because it's far from predictable.
Yeah, and the idea of them not ending up together supports the themes that have been introduced about just literally following your dreams and being okay with making sacrifices for that. The other scene I want to talk about is the audition scene, which is pretty well known. Emma Stone singing the song Audition, which I think is subtitled The Fools Who Dream or something. And the cool thing about it is it's one take and it was shot live. Emma Stone sang it live on set. It was not dubbed over. And it is incredible. The lighting of the scene is so impressive. The rotating camera, her performance. I'm pretty sure if that's the scene that won her the Oscar, like straight up, it's a perfect scene in a movie full of perfect scenes.
Oh no, it's absolutely stellar. Another thing about Mia that I love is that throughout the film, you see that she is a great actress. Like she was really, really good from the audition to the on the phone call where she's pretending she's on the phone. You can see how stellar she is. And when she gets rejected from that, it's heartbreaking to see some of her other auditions later on. And they feel so stiff because she's lost faith in herself and she's lost confidence. And you can see that. And that is really, it's heartbreaking in a way. But then you see Sebastian at the end of the film pushing her after her one woman play bomb, pushing her, almost demanding her to give this audition one last audition a try. And we get the beautiful scene you just referenced.
Yeah, it's amazing. I also love the scene where he pulls up to her house to pick her up for the audition and doesn't seem like she's going to show up and he starts driving away, but she's like, oh, I got coffee. And then she's like, okay, oh, yep, great. Yep, great, let's go.
Yeah, this is not a comedy by any means, but there are a lot of genuinely funny instances in this film.
The pool party at the beginning, yeah. Chief among them. The Iran scene is great.
Yeah, no, it is wonderful. I love Sebastian's banter with J.K. Simmons' character. The two for you, one for me, him trying to negotiate playing his own songs instead of the set list.
Yeah.
It's just such a good film. My favorite Sebastian scene in this film is his Jazz is Dead speech.
Yep.
And I love just the passion that he speaks with it. He says, you know, jazz is not calming, it's exciting. And he talks about it being birthed out of a flop house in New Orleans with all these different cultures mashing together and no one spoke the same language. And so the only way he communicated was through song. And I don't know how accurate that is, but it's a great picture that it is painting. And him saying jazz is dead and speaking about how he loves this art so much that he's going to do everything in his power to save it in any way he can. And his desire to open this jazz club, talking about it's going to be jazz, and anyone can come and play whatever they want as long as it's real jazz, which is amazing. And it's his character is contrasted with Keith, who is very much about fusion and pop scene, and you see him compromise his dream for the sake of complacency, the sake of perhaps he thinks for Mia, when that's not what Mia wants him to do. And she really shakes him back as much as he shakes her to go back and for the one last audition. She shakes him into pursuing his dream again after he becomes complacent. And yeah, it's just so well done.
Yes. Yes, it is. So I do have a question. I think both of our favorite song is A Lovely Night. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
What's your second favorite song?
Ooh. Okay. That is a good question. I think it's going to be Another Day of Sun.
Okay.
What would your second favorite be?
Probably Audition. Yeah. If not, Someone in the Crowd.
Yeah.
That one's amazing. Love the slow-mo. Use of slow-mo in that. Really cool.
When she comes out of the bathroom and everything's just slowed down, and then comes out into the patio where the pool is and it's snowing, and then everything immediately jumps right back into full steam. That's stellar.
Even the choreography at the beginning of that one with the four mm-hmm. girls in their dresses is really fun.
Yeah. I want to point out in Another Day of Sun, there's a point where I think it might be the second time he comes across the screen, but there's a guy on this mini bike and he comes across the screen and you follow the camera pans and follows behind him. From that point on to the end of the number is one shot, is one single shot, which I think is incredible, because if you watch in the background, everything that everyone's doing, there's a guy doing a backflip off the top of a car. Everyone's doing their choreographed dances. Another note is every person that gets out of their car in the beginning of the song has to eventually find their way back to their original car, hop up on the car, dance, which means that some of the people that were standing on the car tops had to be reinforced so they could dance on it. There was a lot that went into it. And then the final thing that Mandy Moore had to deal with was the fact that the one request from Damien Chazelle is that at the very end, everyone slams their door at the same time. And it took them several takes, but she finally got that. And it is a beautiful intro to this amazing film. I love that they, and I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot about this film. I'm not giving you a lot of room to speak, but I'll say this. I love that we immediately jump into a musical number, so you know exactly what type of film this is, and there's no confusion as to what you're getting into.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a brilliant opening scene, and the one take thing is especially impressive, but don't worry about talking too much. I've had 4 years to talk about this movie. You've had a couple months. So it's wonderful. It's magical. It's currently number 6 or 7 on my top 10 all time. I don't think it's in your top 10. I don't know why, with the way you talk about it, honestly, but
and you haven't checked my top 50 films all time Letterboxd. And then you'd know exactly where it was.
I did look at that once upon a time. Not in a while, though.
Well, if you had, you'd see it was my number 9.
Oh, excellent. I am glad that it finally broke the top 10.
Yeah, something had to go. And I threw La La Land in there because it is wonderful.
Excellent. I think it's pretty clear both of us would give this an easy 5 out of 5.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, what are you doing? If you have, why not go watch it again?
Please.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about it, or think we're ready to wrap it up?
Yeah. No, I think we're good. I think we're good.
One last note. I will say, I won't talk about it much, but when you watch the movie, pay attention to Damien Chazelle's use of color. Different colors mean different things in both literature and film, and he uses them perfectly. It's really cool. That is all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You were spot on in that assessment. So,
yeah, if there's nothing else, I think I'll outro this episode.
Hit it.
Next week, we are doing something. It's going to be a mini cast. And pay attention to the Instagram account, because that's We Watch Movies Podcast. We Watch Movies Podcast. We'll announce what we're doing on the minicast there. I think we're good.
Yeah. What's the next main episode? That's important.
Okay, that's right. I should say that for full episodes, we are getting into a four-part series called Forrest Watches Harry Potter for the First Time. We are going to be watching...
Yes. It's about freaking time. It's going to be amazing. If you hate it, I'm going to hate you.
I thought
you were... Just kidding.
No. I'm going to be watching all 8 Harry Potter films for the first time. I literally know nothing about Harry Potter.
People, this is how little he knows. For a second segment, I suggested he take the official sorting test to see what house he'd be in. And he said, what? That's how little he knows. Baseline information that most people know, even if they don't know Harry Potter, Forrest hasn't even heard of before. So this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I know nothing. I know that Daniel Radcliffe is in it. And I know he plays this kid named Harry Potter. I think
he's a pretty important part of the series. Yeah.
90% sure of that. I also know Alan Rickman and Ralph Fiennes and Emma Watson are in it.
Oh, when I read the cast list next time.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. And I'm going to do most of it from memory because I am kind of obsessed.
Yeah. Also, this will be the last podcast I'll host for the next little while here until we get done with the Harry Potter specials. So that'll be that's all on you, man. I'm just gonna observe
and hopefully participate in the discussion.
Hopefully I won't hate it, for Elijah's sake and honestly my own.
Yeah, because you got 8 of these things to watch and you're not getting out of it even if you hate the first one.
Yeah, I think he would end not just the podcast but our friendship if I nixed the whole thing after watching the first.
Yep.
Yeah, I know nothing about Harry Potter, and yet I have family that is obsessed. Not immediate family, but extended family that is obsessed.
I'm honored that you would think of me as extended family.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't even think of me as your Harry Potter friend. What the heck is wrong with you?
I think you're better than that.
Oh. Well, thanks.
I think of you as my Avatar The Last Airbender friend.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. So if that's it, I'll outro us.
I'm a Ravenclaw, by the way, just in case anyone was wondering. Jackie is too.
What the heck does that even mean?
You'll find
out. Is that just something you made up?
Sure. Hit us with the outro.
Well, hang on. Why does Jackie also get to be a Ravenclaw?
Because she took the test.
Did you help her? Did she cheat?
No, a Ravenclaw would not cheat. Trust me, dude. Slytherins would cheat. Ravenclaws would not cheat.
I'm a giraffe hoof. That's what house I'm in. The house of giraffe foot.
Who founded that one?
Jim Gaffigan.
It's about as good of an answer as I could have hoped for.
All right. I have been Forrest. He has been Elijah. You guys have been beautiful. This has been We Watch Movies. We'll see you next time. Stay beautiful.
Avada Kedavra.